The opinions voiced on this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, or financial advisor prior to investing. Securities and investment advisory services are offered through Jenios Wealth Management Incorporated, a member of FINRA SIPC.
Where is the growth in our economy? Well, we're going to talk about that today. It's What Really Matters with Jeff Hiback and Peter McClellan. We're going to start now. And welcome to What Really Matters. And I don't know, it's a silly thing that Jeff likes to write about. It can't be that important that there be growth in the economy. I mean, since when does that matter, really, right? I'm being facetious. You got to know that. I still want to call this Sunshine Friday, and I know we're stopping that. But unfortunately, if you're driving, listening to this, and you have any suicidal tendencies, stop this right now because this is going to be a stinker. I can tell.
Oh, jeez.
Not that bad. It's But Jeff and I were talking before we started, and Jeff, let's you go, Jeff. Where's the growth in the economy? Give us the positive first, that before we put people into a blue funk.
Yeah, I mean, we added an estimated 255,000 new jobs during the month of July. Okay. That's a good thing.
That's
that follows the 292,000. Jobs that were added in June. So just on the surface, that's great news.
Right.
Wage growth is the highest we've seen during the Great Recession, since the Great Recession ended, up 2.6% on a year-over-year basis. So people should be getting wages. We've seen the labor force participation rate pick up a little bit, so people that maybe were sitting out have decided they want to start joining the labor force. So that's definitely a good sign.
All right. Now, that's a good sign. And correct me if I'm wrong, but as I look back at my thoughts on the blog, I didn't read this today, but some point along the week, and I'm referring to, by the way, when I say the blog, I'm referring to semtradersblog.com. Jeff writes some wonderful things. And finally, the graphics and the way this thing is outlined now, the way it's laid out, it works on your laptop, on your iPad, your phone. It's great stuff. I my hat's off to his daughter. I can't give him too much. Give him too much credit. Her, I want to give a lot of credit. But
Well, I've helped produce her, so.
Oh, good. All right. So he helped her out. But anyway, somewhere along the line, you also talked about the wages and what they really were. And so peel this onion back a little bit. Is this really good news about the economy? Is it about the job growth per se? Or is it meaning like what's the, I think you had something in there about what the average hourly wage was and
yeah.
Tell us about that a little bit.
If you look at the overall average of all workers, I know a lot of people won't believe this, but according to the Federal Reserve, the average hourly wage for every American worker is $25.69 an hour. And the average work week is 34 and a half hours per week. So that means the average annual income is about $46,000. And that kind of matches up to what we see with tax records and things like that. However, looking at the Department of Labor's website, the new jobs that were added from 2009 to 2013 were around the $8 to $14 an hour range. We actually saw jobs lost at those higher wages. And then we saw a little bit of improvement over the last few years, 2013 to 2015. Most jobs added were in that $12 to $24 an hour range. But notice they're all still below the average wage. And so looking at it, about the average hourly earnings for these new jobs was $16 an hour. And they're replacing jobs that did average about $28 an hour during the prior economic expansion in the mid-2000s.
Okay, and that wasn't even the most depressing part of what I know Jeff has to share. Jeff, tell us where is the growth? There is some growth. There is some high spots in the economy. Where are we seeing this job growth?
Bartenders, waitresses, part-time jobs. You know, continue to be the biggest areas of growth. Outside of, you know, the one real bright spot, this entire economic expansion, even during the Great Recession, was healthcare workers. And it started even before the Affordable Care Act came into being, and it's really gone exponential since then, where it frustrates me that it's called the Affordable Care Act, because it's made it easier to pay for health insurance, or not health insurance if you're an employer.
No.
But when you make something easier to pay for, then the costs actually go up. And so that's what we're seeing, is a rapid expansion, because people are now using it, but it is becoming more expensive. It's the same way with student loans. Mm-hmm. That's made college actually more expensive, because there's no incentive for the people that are providing education or providing healthcare to actually lower their costs to try to grow their business. They don't have to, because the government's made it a lot easier for people to pay for it. But you know, that's one thing. Where we're seeing tremendous growth, though, is in our level of debt. Oof. So I don't know if that's good news or not. I was looking at just since the recession ended, mm-hmm. and that's going back to, well, I guess going on 7 years ago, July 2009, you add up what we've added as far as the deficit spending goes, which is supposed to be stimulus, and the Federal Reserve balance sheet. Mm-hmm. And it has only cost us $741,198 for every one job we've added to our economy.
Only $741,000 for each $46,000 job, if we're lucky?
Yeah. So if you look at that, it would only take us 16 years for the taxpayers to recover what was spent to generate this one job.
If there was no interest on the debt, right?
No interest on the debt. And also, if we assumed those jobs were $25.69 an hour, if we were actually look at the real average, which was around $16 an hour, it's going to take our economy 26 years to pay back the $741,000 for each job added.
And you're not actually predicting that it will be paid back. You're just saying that's what it would take if there was a heart to pay anything back, right? That's what it would take.
Right. And okay. Well, the whole concept is, and we're getting at, you know, Keynesian economics, where, yeah, hey, look, the government has to spend money in order to goose the economy. And, you know, I'm listening to Bloomberg all day, and, you know, Hillary Clinton somehow is taking credit for the job creation. The president, of course, is taking credit for the job creation, but they're not taking credit for the $741,000 per job that we spent to get those jobs. And they're not looking at the massive drop in the wages that those jobs are paying. And, you know, this concept of spending money in order to make money, I'm just trying to use the math and the data to say, okay, if you truly believe the government needs to spend money, then we need to understand how long it's going to take to get that money back in our economy. So, yippee, we have 250,000 more people working, but the money it costs us to put those people to work, is it really worth it? If it's going to take anywhere from 16 to 25 years to get that money back into our economy.
Yeah, and I'd have to say, if it takes that long, it's a generation lost. You know, that's not good.
And that's kind of what we're looking at. And that's, you know, that's what's really frustrating. We, you know, yes, we got jobs, and yes, everybody, you know, that's a Democrat is taking credit for it, but they're not looking at the overall level of income. They're not looking at, you know, what's going on with the middle class, and what's going to happen on the tax side to pay for all the Social Security and Medicare benefits that we've promised to the American people.
Yeah, it's not sustainable, and that's the part that is most disturbing, because there doesn't seem to be a willingness. Well, let's be real candid though. Is there a willingness in either political party to really address the debt and tackle the debt and get rid of it. And I don't see it.
We've yet to see it. We've had, back to, Ross Perot and his flip charts on the three broadcast networks in 1992. Mm-hmm. He started talking about this, and this was back when Social Security and Medicare payments were about 5 or 6% of our national budget. We're looking at now they're around 9%, and if we don't do anything, it's going to be 12% of all of our spending will be Social Security and Medicare over the next 15 years.
12%?
And that's 12% of money that's just no longer productive in our economy. It's not being invested into the future. It's being put into consumption. And what our economy really needs is investments that increase our productivity.
Mm-hmm. And that again, it sounds like from what you've been sharing that that neither the government nor the corporations and the private sector are putting money into capital expenditures to expand and grow. There seems to be a reluctance. You've talked about this before, the corporate buybacks, companies buying back their own stock instead of taking earnings and reinvesting for the long term, for the future growth. You're just not seeing that happen, right? That's kind of it's problematic because we need things like bridges and roads and utilities, infrastructure. That's a kind of an important thing.
It kind of, on a micro scale, we see that, I don't know how it is in Minnesota, but, the state of Arizona just keeps cutting the money that they give to the public school system. And so that puts the burden on the individual school districts and the people that own property in those districts. And the attitude, most of the time tends to be, well, I don't have kids in here. Why would I want to spend it? Why would I want my taxes to go up? And they don't see the big picture of, well, if you're retired, you need a productive workforce to pay all your benefits, to provide services for you when you're no longer working.
Right.
And this myopic focus on, we're only going to spend money on things that create short-term benefits is just going to cause massive problems down the road to the very people who are saying, I don't want to spend any money on this because I won't get a benefit out of it. So, if you're retired and you think, oh, I don't really care if we invest in roads and infrastructure because I'm not going to be working anymore, you're losing sight of the fact that you need those workers to pay taxes so that they can pay the Social Security and Medicare benefits. Because guess what? The trust fund is not there anymore.
No, it's not.
And if we do nothing about it, we're going to be in the next 10 years, and this is the Congressional Budget Office. This is an independent, apolitical organization mm-hmm. that just ran the numbers based on, by the way, 3% GDP growth and no recession over the next 10 years. We're going to have a deficit in 10 years that's almost the same as our deficit was in 2009 at the very depths of the Great Recession.
Oof. Wow.
That's unsustainable.
No, it is absolutely unsustainable. But let me ask you, this is a very interesting topic because I know part of what some would say would be good would be if we naturalized a lot of people who have come into the country illegally, perhaps, because they're not necessarily paying for the benefits and services that they're getting, whether it's education or healthcare or whatever. And, giving them a pass to say, here's a path to citizenship, and now you can pay Social Security. I could see some rationale in that. But I don't. I also can understand why people who have come into the country legally and have waited and have done the things according to what the laws say, why they'd be sort of irritated or frustrated with it. Would that be a potential solution, or is that just a partial solution? Do you think if we had every person who's come in and hasn't done it in a above board, waited to get the visa and get in? If they were to be paying Social Security and what they're doing right now, maybe some of them are. I really don't know. I don't know if there's any good stats on that in terms of what people are actually. I've heard a number of people have various Social Security numbers, so they're paying into the system in some ways. But is it really going to be a benefit?
Just not into their account.
Exactly. It's sad.
I mean, Peter, I don't know if you resigned from the Republican Party, but you may be getting something in the mail that says you're no longer welcome.
Why is
that? For having a thought like that.
Well, I just wondered.
No, I mean, you're hitting the nail on the head, and this is what's so frustrating. You know, you mentioned both sides don't care to address the Social Security and Medicare imbalances. Both sides don't seem to care about the budget deficit. And I'm extremely frustrated that the Republicans don't understand the math of the demographics. And we have an aging workforce. We have a whole bunch of people that are going to be taking that $1.3 trillion a year, you know, out of our spending account, and we got to have a way to pay for it. And there just simply aren't enough workers currently in the U.S. to do that. And, you know, you go back to the fundamental drivers of long-term economic growth comes right down to the growth of your labor force times how productive they are. And you mentioned earlier infrastructure projects, and there's other things, you know, legitimate education programs, not just, hey, we're going to let you get whatever college degree you want, but, you know, something that trains your workforce into jobs that are actually going to create economic growth.
You mean they can't all be social workers? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, honestly, we do need more social workers given, you know, what's going on in some of these cities.
But, yeah, we do. It's true.
But, you know, people, and that's a service. That's a service that our country needs to actually make a higher quality of life for everybody. But I'm talking about jobs that create economic growth, you know, the engineers, the computer technicians, and, you know, all these things that are going to create strong economic growth in the U.S. So that type of education spending, as well as you need more workers. So if we can't make our workers more productive, which is pretty hard. When you have a developed country like the United States, it's hard to move productivity up too much. But we could see it go from 2% to maybe 3% productivity, and that would be a pretty big gain.
Yeah, but
it's not going to be enough
to really move the needle. And the other thing too, I would think, is that part of what you started with before you were talking about, or I posed the question to you because I read it in your blog, but just what has happened to the wages since 2009, we really have not seen a return to those higher, you know, per hour or per year, you know, salaries, wages. Now, here's a statistic. You got to look at this. This is something to think about. A poll was out there, and it said, are there too many illegal aliens in the United States? Well, 22% of the American people said yes, 17 said no, and 61% said no comprende. So that's a T-shirt I was thinking of buying, but I thought, nah, I don't want to get anybody that upset with me. So, anyway, I'm joking because you got to have a little levity, you know, you got to have some fun too with this. But really, if everyone who's here illegally was legalized, wouldn't they still be dealing with pretty much low paying jobs that? Is that really going to move GDP?
Well, if you have more people actually working and paying in the system,
it helps. But
there's all sorts of other things. There's incentives for employers and hiring and what they're paying out in wages. You have to work both sides of that productivity side. You have to increase the productivity and you have to increase the number of people working, and you know, figure out ways to have more things produced in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the answers to that, but I know the current direction we're going doesn't work. And I propose this, I think, every election for the last 12 years. I think we need to form a third party and just call it the math party. Because the things I'm saying are not based on some political ideology that I have. It's based on math. And, you know, the math behind Social Security and Medicare just doesn't work out.
No.
The math behind our labor force participation and productivity growth doesn't work out. The math behind our budget deficit doesn't work out.
And the math behind our digital signal with Jeff is not working out. Anyway, I know where Jeff was going, and what he's saying is the math does matter. and we joke around a lot about things on this podcast, but it's not funny. It is a very serious problem that it does seem that so few people today are concerned about the massive debts and how are we ever going to get out from under this thing. And so it's troubling. It's troubling. You know, we can celebrate the great jobs numbers that really aren't that great. We can celebrate the fact that, you know, 75% of the corporations are beating expectations, but have also at the same time in the same years lowered their expectations of where their guidance goes in terms of what their earnings. It's like shooting the fish in a barrel, so to speak. So anyway, there's a number of problems here with this. Where is the real growth? And that is a big question. And that is what really matters. Where is the growth in our economy? We can't have an economy where the primary growth is in healthcare with and I know that's a fallacy too, because people in healthcare are extremely frustrated and overwhelmed, and it's a disaster. So anyway, or we can't just have bartenders and waiters be the preliminary sector that's growing that's not good. It's not good. Anyway, I won't belabor it any further, but I would say this. The growth does matter. The economy is that these things cannot. We can't get by without some type of consequence for all of this lack of regard for the numbers, as Jeff so appropriately puts. And really appreciate that about Jeff. We tease him, call him Mr. Sunshine, but he is a man that is absolutely focused on what matters. And the fact that so few people are, there's going to be a consequence, or numerous consequences, that we're all going to endure at some point. So here's my challenge to you, our listeners, is if you are not that confident about where you're heading with your financial picture, maybe it is time to get a second opinion. Maybe it's time that you get a first opinion if you have never sat down with a financial advisor. Maybe it's time to look at what we're talking about regarding active money management and the value of it to help mitigate loss when it occurs. It's coming. The losses are going to be coming. We're in a bubble. The valuations we've not seen except for being in previous bubbles. That's where we are. That's sad, because the real growth in this situation is it's anemic growth. And yet, if you look at where the market's gone for the past, since 2009, it's great. Stalled out last year, and now we've got a little bit of growth from last June till now. But, June 1st to June 1st was nothing. The market went down and went up, went down and went up, went down and went up, did nothing. There's no growth right now in terms of the economy. Very, very, very low growth. It's anemic growth. And Jeff has pointed this out. Timeless times. Hey, it's Friday. What can I tell you? And I do want to encourage you. Go to semtradersblog.com. That new website, I'm telling you, his daughter is a champion for simplification and beautification of a website. She's remarkable what she's done. Jeff's blog, the work that SEM does, is worthy of that website. And it's there was a disconnect before. They've always produced remarkably poignant, significant information that matters, but it hasn't been put in this type of format. Go there, check it out. All kinds of interesting things you'll see. The chart of the week. He and his daughter have done a remarkably good job on that. So I end the podcast usually by asking Jeff the question, well, what is it people say regarding the 401k latte when they're thinking about sitting down and talking to me or talking to someone here at the 401k latte? We say, invest in a conversation and do it soon.
You've been listening to What Really Matters with Peter McClellan, a chartered financial consultant with the 401k Latte Company in Lakeville, Minnesota. For a no-cost consultation or second opinion of financial issues, call us at 952-882-0400. That's 952-882-0400. Or visit us online at 401klatte.com. That's 401klatte.com. We want to remind you to invest in a conversation.